This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. This is not the voice of your cultural crusader. It's of one of his producers, rock star Greg Tomlin. Thank you so much for joining us this Christmas Eve. We're playing some history shows for you today, all available at medvedhistorystore.com. This hour, we're going to be listening to the Battle of Princeton. Here's Michael.
This is something the Americans had never seen before. The first time the British had run away from Americans. And suddenly a huge whoop went up the entire American army, echoed by General Washington, who couldn't restrain himself. He rode again to the front of his men, shouting out, "It's a fine fox chase, boys! Come on!" And they followed the tall figure on a white horse. What did Washington mean, "It's a fine fox chase"? One of the most wounding moments of his life had been at the Battle of Long Island, where when his men ran away, Washington cursing and unable to assemble them, General Howe had ordered his buglers to play a fox chase. Not a military bugle call, just the fox chase theme, as if it was just sport to hunt these Americans who ran away. Now the tables turned, George Washington saying, "It is a fine fox chase, boys," joyously, completely unrestrained in the moment of victory. It was the first time in his entire military career. Remember, he had fought in the French and Indian War 2 decades earlier. But it's the first time in his whole military career that this man, George Washington, had seen an enemy in full flight across an open field. He couldn't resist the chase. He left to other generals the job of taking the garrison in the town. Meanwhile, he led the rest of his men chasing the British through woods, over creeks, relentlessly. People who saw this amazing day, of course, never forgot it. There was a young naval officer from Pennsylvania who had been granted leave to serve as a volunteer with the New Jersey militia. He left the sea. He was there on the battlefield at Princeton, and he wrote to his wife the day after the battle, "Oh, my Susan, it was a glorious day, and I would not have been absent from it for all the money I ever expect to be worth. General Washington's greatness was far beyond my description. I shall never forget what I felt at Princeton on his account when I saw him brave all the dangers of the field and his important life hanging, as it were, by a single hair, with 1,000 deaths flying around him. Believe me, I thought not of myself." Meanwhile, with the British in complete collapse and running away, there is still the British garrison back at Nassau Hall. Remember, that is the big building at the College of Princeton. The garrison was outside, but they decided to go inside this stone building. They knocked out all the glass windows of the American college, and they prepared to defend themselves against the advancing Americans, who are now marching up into the town to finish the day's job. The British had plenty of room. Remember, this is the largest building in all of the colonies. They are very well positioned because it's a tall building. They have guns pointing out of every window. So it's not such an easy job. Except there was a pretty good artillery officer who brought his guns up and was preparing to take care of this matter. His name? Joseph Mulder, the real hero of the Battle of Princeton, the stubborn wharf rat who had changed everything. And he was assisted by another artillery captain, bright young man, but from a dubious background. No one could forget that this other artillery captain was a bastard. He was illegitimate, and he was greatly humiliated by that status because he had pretensions of being a gentleman. But this other teenage captain was named Alexander Hamilton. Later had some importance in American history. Captain Hamilton and Captain Mulder moved their artillery into firing position. out of range of the rifles pointing at them from every window of Nassau Hall. And all of a sudden, Captain Hamilton gave the order to fire. The first round of shot bounced off the stone walls of Nassau Hall. You, by the way, can see this today. If you go to Princeton campus, you can see Nassau Hall. It's still there. Princeton, by the way, the whole battlefield is the campus. That's where Princeton University is now. And it's fascinating to walk around to realize that a battle was fought there. Crucial battle. Some of the Americans, including a Captain Wilkinson, were almost killed by the shot bouncing off Nassau Hall. Joseph Mulder then said, well, let me take care of this. He readjusted the angle of his guns, and they fired a second volley. For those of you who don't really believe that there's some kind of higher power involved here, well, first of all, there's the fact that the weather turned suddenly wet to mess up the road so Cornwallis couldn't bag Washington in time, and then the weather froze so that the mud was frozen so Washington could make it to Princeton. And then there's this. The second round at Nassau Hall, fired by Captain Mulder and Captain Hamilton, pierces the building. It enters the largest room in the building, which is the prayer hall. And then does what? It embeds itself directly in a picture of King George II. There was a large picture of King George II. The cannonball literally took his head off his body. The portrait remained there, but the cannonball went directly into his head. Now, the British were not fools. They saw this. They said, wait a minute, what are the odds against a cannonball going through a wall and then landing right smack dab in the king's face? Suddenly, Captains Hamilton and Mulder saw a white flag coming out of a third-story window in Nassau Hall, and the British marched out. Suddenly, these Americans took 194 prisoners, proud British regulars, marching out of Nassau Hall. They were described by one of the people who was present as a haughty, crabbed set of men, as they fully exhibited on their march to the country. This is that same sergeant, Sergeant R., who we talked about before, whose experience we've shared. He says, in this battle, my pack, which was made fast by leather strings, was shot from my back, and with it went what little clothing I had. It was, however, soon replaced by one which belonged to a British officer and was well furnished. It was not mine for long, for it was stolen shortly thereafterwards. Immediately after the battle, an officer observing blood on my clothes said, Sergeant, you are wounded. I replied, no, but on examination I found the end of my forefinger gone and bleeding profusely. When and how it happened I never knew. I found also bullet holes in the skirts of my coat, but excepting the slight wound of my finger, I was not injured. The army retreated then to the Plaquemine Mountains. The weather was extremely cold, and we suffered greatly from its severity. The inhabitants manifested very different feelings towards us from those exhibited a few weeks before, and were now ready to take up arms against the British. He had lost his finger, but the Americans had won the battle, and this victory changed everything. Even with Cornwallis and his 8,000 men bearing down on Washington and about to surprise Washington in the town of Princeton. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton. For more history shows, go to medvedhistorystore.com.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. Exit polls from the 2020 election show signs of a stronger Republican Party building a broader base. The Trump campaign focused on winning black, Latino, and Asian votes and, to a surprising extent, succeeded. President Trump's percentage of black voters rose by 50% compared to 2016, and among Latino males, he scored a competitive 36%. The GOP also saw a surge in Jewish support from 24% to 31%. A rise that played a role in Trump's Florida victory. In another area, Republicans still have work to do. Self-described moderate voters, 40% of the overall electorate, picked Biden over Trump by nearly 2-1. Yes, conservatives are more numerous than liberals, so we can win without outright majorities among the moderates. But Republicans win best as a right-center coalition, and moderate shouldn't be treated as a dirty word. I'm Michael Medved.
I've been in back pain since my early 20s. Now I'm 51. In my early 20s, I worked for the state prison. I got injured and I was off work for about a year. I'm now a train engineer. I basically sit all day long. My wife making me take Relief Factor literally changed my life. I don't feel like I'm 20 again, but my back does.
Relief Factor really can help. The 3-week quick start is here to stay. It's discounted all the way down to $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. There are no drugs, no chemicals, just good, healthful stuff. You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. Call 833-654-PAIN. It's toll-free, 833-654-PAIN. Or go to the website michaelmedved.com and click on the big banner for Relief Factor. You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. For a limited time, you can get a queen-size premium MyPillow for the lowest price ever. Regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. MyPillow is patented and adjusts to any sleep position. It's washable and dryable, comes with a 10-year warranty, and 100% made in the USA. I'm also giving you deep discounts on all my MyPillow products, including my bed sheets, mattress toppers, and bath towels. That's $29.98 for a queen size premium MyPillow and deep discounts on all my MyPillow products. Not only are you getting the lowest prices ever, but they're going to make the best Christmas gifts ever. Buy now and I'll extend my 60-day money back guarantee to March 1st, 2021.
Call 800-320-6280. Use the promo code MEDVED. Call 800-320-6280. Promo code MEDVED.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
And welcome back. We're covering the Battle of Princeton and the winter of 1776-1777. The Battle of Princeton, not George Washington encountering General Howe's main army. That would be ridiculous. I mean, there was no way. Washington with only 1,400 regulars and, another perhaps 3,000 militia who didn't know what they were doing. Many of them had just run away in the middle of the night before. He wasn't ready to take on Howe's main force, but ingeniously, Washington had slipped aside, slipped around Cornwallis in the town of Trenton, deceiving Cornwallis with his rather ingenious use of bonfires and also of having people dig all night to completely mislead the British. This, by the way, was fairly typical of American inventiveness. There's another rather obscure but I think totally remarkable example of it that involved General Israel Putnam, Old Putt, and it also involves the town of Princeton. A few days after the battle, when the Americans were left just a small detachment there in Princeton, Putnam had been ordered by Washington, as had all of his Washington's subordinates, to, quote, give out your strength to be twice what it actually is. That's what Washington wrote to General Putnam on January 5th. Now, this became a very difficult challenge because one of the wounded from the Battle of Princeton was a British captain who we know as Captain McPherson. He's really recorded in history only as Captain McPherson. We don't know much more about him. He had been shot through the lungs. He had received every medical attention, but his recovery was in doubt. And pathetically, the captain asked that a fellow officer from the British side be allowed to visit him and help make out his will. Well, at the time, General Israel Putnam was trying to hold his encampment at Princeton with a less than overwhelming force. He had 50 men with him. The remainder were out in detachments or were with George Washington heading toward the mountains. He absolutely did not want to bring a British officer into camp to make out the will for this dying officer and have the guy go back to Cornwallis and say, hey, you know, Princeton? Putnam is there. He's got 50 guys. It's pathetic. Let's mop him up. So here's what happened. Putnam dispatched a flag of truce to Brunswick with the captain's request, Captain McPherson's request, that another officer come so he could make out his will. But he gave strict orders to the courier not to return back to the town of Princeton with the other officer until after dark. In the evening, what Putnam ordered is that candles should be placed in every window of the college and in every window of every house, though most of them were empty, in the entire town. They assembled a whole bunch of candles. When all of a sudden the British officer came into town, he was astonished. I mean, this was lit up like the proverbial Christmas tree. Throughout the night, the 50 men, sometimes all together and sometimes in small detachments, were marched from different quarters past the one house where McPherson lay. Marched in all different directions, the same 50 guys. They were kept up all night. This created the impression of a multitude. And upon his return to the British lines, McPherson's friend told Cornwallis, when he was asked, how strong are the rebels at Princeton? He said, at least several thousand, sir. I think we're 50 guys there. This is what we call American ingenuity at its finest. And this certainly a huge role in winning this Battle of Princeton. Meanwhile, General Howe had a whole lot of explaining to do. He had to write back to the British about what had happened. He had to write back to his bosses, including Lord George Germain, who was the British Secretary of State responsible for administering this campaign. What is going on here? How could a motley crew of unorganized rebels now win the second victory within 10 days against the cream of His Majesty's army? Well, Howe, rather than explaining it, lied. Howe listed the British losses of killed and wounded at 276. Washington estimated the enemy's losses at 600. Now, that figure included the 300 prisoners that Washington had taken. Howe's figure did not include the prisoners who had been embarrassingly seized. One indisputable fact did remain, and Howe had a tough time explaining it back at home. The 4th Brigade, an elite brigade, had been totally annihilated. And meanwhile, with the losses to the British, the total American losses for the day, 30 soldiers, 30 non-commissioned enlisted men, and 14 officers. The tragedy for the Americans was the loss of General Hugh Mercer. By the way, one of the most moving things you can ever see. As I mentioned before, that Mercer had this deaf-mute son who later became fairly well-known as a painter. He studied with Charles Wilson Peale in Philadelphia. This was at an era when anyone who was so severely handicapped who couldn't hear, who achieved anything, was considered remarkable. His most famous painting is a painting of the death of the father he adored on the battlefield at Princeton, bayoneted by British infantrymen who thought he was George Washington. You can see that painting. It's at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Art. It's quite remarkable, and the circumstances of this poor boy painting his own father's heroic death, deeply, deeply touching to look at. There was all kinds of aftermath of the battle, and everyone responded to the aftermath in a different way. What I want to do now is go back to this unpublished account, not published in books, only in magazines and records, of Sergeant Joseph White, the artillery sergeant and champion speller who survived the Battle of Princeton. Here's his account, first of all, of the battle, and then the aftermath of the battle is fascinating for Sergeant White. His account of the battle, he says, "A little before we got in sight of the enemy, our whole army halted. The captain sent me a sergeant with a bucket full of powder and rum. Every man must drink a half gill. He came to me to know if I had drank any. I told him no. Drink some, said he. I have, so I took a little. We marched on a short distance. We see them all formed in a line and ready to receive us. We marched forward, so did they. I ordered the limbers off, and to man the drag ropes. They were to the north of us. The sun shone upon them, and their arms glistened very bright. It seemed to strike an awe upon us." After the battle was over, writes Sergeant White, "I went into a room in the college, into Nassau Hall, which was the main room of Princeton College. They had just taken out the 194 haughty, crabbed British officers and men who had surrendered. And the college was empty. They had knocked out all the glass in the windows, remember? But Sergeant White reports, "After the battle was over, I went into a room in the college and locked myself in." Why did he lock himself in a room in the college? Well, you'll find out in a moment. Because Sergeant White writes, "I saw a plate of tote," I think he means toast, "a teapot, and everything just handy for breakfast. I sat down and helped myself well. I was very hungry, marching all night and fighting in the morning. I felt highly refreshed. After I was done, I looked round the room and saw an officer's coat. I went to it and found it a new one. The paper never taken off the buttons. Was plated or solid silver, I could not determine which, lined with white satin. There was a silk shirt, an elegant one, and a pair of silk shoes, and a small gilt Bible, all of which I took." Of course.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance.
Stock market have you nervous with all the massive fluctuations? With the hope for a COVID vaccine on the rise, shifting political landscape, and the election at an end, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text MONEY to 411411 to find out how our technology can forecast market trends up to 3 days in advance with incredible accuracy. Text MONEY to 411411 to get what you need to stay ahead of market trends and find explosive moves before they happen. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. Stop guessing. Start predicting trends 72 hours in advance. Text MONEY to 411411 and experience Vantage Point for free. Text MONEY to 411411 so you can protect and grow your capital now. Don't wait. Text MONEY to 411411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
A Christmas Eve storm is delivering snow and severe weather across the United States. With snow in the Midwest and tornado threats in the Southeast, storms are blanketing the United States this Christmas Eve. The storm on Wednesday bringing snow to Minnesota and Wisconsin. Meanwhile, as it moves east, Folks in Ohio will be treated to a white Christmas. That same storm bringing severe weather to southern Alabama and the Florida Panhandle. The CDC says America is looking at a very tough month ahead when it comes to coronavirus deaths. The Public Health Agency's latest forecast shows the virus-related death toll in the United States could be as high as 419,000 by January 16th. Just last week, the CDC projected as many as 391,000 deaths by January 9th. This is USA Radio News.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com. And an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton.
Orders came for all the men to throw away their dirty old blankets, reports Sergeant White, and take new ones. The barrels of flour were great indeed. After filling all the wagons, they knocked the heads out of the remainder and strewed it around the ground. Washington was getting ready, by the way, to leave the town of Princeton. Cornwallis was literally just a half hour away. And about to come crashing into the town, he still could have captured Washington's army. They had beaten the British. They'd taken the stores. They'd taken the barrels. They would take the barrels of flour that they could. Meanwhile, they didn't want to leave others for the British, so they strewed it all around the ground. But as they were getting ready to leave, Sergeant White reports, the women came and looked at it, the women of the town, but they seemed afraid to meddle with it. I, being nigh, told the women to scalp it up by aprons full before the enemy come. I had rolled a barrel to the ammunition wagon and told the captain that I was only going to that house, pointing to it. Should be back in just a few minutes. Why was he going to a house? He had this idea. I engaged a woman to bake me some cakes. Here was his idea. He basically would come, bring a bunch of flour, and say to the woman, here, you can keep some of the flour, bake a bunch of cakes. I want some cakes. You can keep the rest yourself. Let's do a deal. Meanwhile, he went to the woman in the house, and he says, I asked the woman if she had any daughters. What do you want to know that for? Said she. I told her, do not worry. I was steady as a pious old deacon. I'm sure she was very reassured. Here is a ragged, dirty, sweaty, filthy American sergeant with a whole bunch of stolen stuff that he just took out of Princeton College. And he says, do you have any daughters? Wouldn't you be worried? Well, sure she was. He said, I told her that I was as steady as a pious old deacon, he writes. How many daughters have you? She replied, two. Well, I have got presents for both, said I. When I come again, we'll bring them. I went to see how the cakes come on and carried my presents. Here, mother, said I, are the presents. Call your daughters. She went to the stairs and called Sally. Come down. But she come part of the way and stopped. I went to the bottom of the stairs and said, Sally, come down. Here is a present for you. She came. Here, try this petticoat on. And if it fits, you keep it. Tell your sister to come. I've got something for her. She came. I told her to take the shoes and try them on. If they fitted her, to keep them. He had given her, in other words, the shoes that he took from the British officer and the silk shirt that he had taken from the British officer, passing it off as a petticoat. Meanwhile, he writes, I went to the company and stayed some time. Orders came to get ready to form the line and march in half an hour. I ran to see if the cakes were done. The woman said the oven was heating. I could have some in an hour's time. They didn't have an hour's time. Sergeant White never got his cakes, but he did get the satisfaction of giving Sally some presents. Meanwhile, he had that coat, the new coat with the gold buttons on it or the silver buttons. And what did Sergeant White do with it? He reports, that coat I sold to an officer of a rifle regiment. The uniform answered to his all but the buttons. It belonged to the 40th Regiment, faced with White. I sold it for $18. Meanwhile, they had to leave town. The last Americans to leave the town of Princeton, heading north, not knowing again where they're going, the last Americans to leave the town could hear the advance guard of Cornwallis coming into the town. And Cornwallis was not in a good mood, having just heard what was happening. Someone who saw Cornwallis entering the town described him as entering the town sweating and puffing and going forward furious. But the old fox gave him a slip again. Cornwallis arrived in, quote, a most infernal sweat, running, puffing, and blowing and swearing at being so outwitted. Meanwhile, Washington headed north with the idea of claiming 70,000 pounds sterling in the town of Brunswick. There was only one problem. There was somebody else in the town of Brunswick, too. The American prisoner, General Charles Lee, remember him? Insubordinate, impossible, haughty, ridiculous. One of the great breaks that had been caught by the Continental Army was that Charles Lee had been taken prisoner about 3 weeks before. Unfortunately, there was no way that Washington could get the gold and silver in Brunswick without picking up Charles Lee as well. Question is it worth it? We'll be right back. On the march once more, the second smashing victory in less than 10 days. And yet, the Army, Washington's cold, little, but deeply encouraged Army, wouldn't dare stand and fight against Cornwallis, not in Princeton, not anywhere else. They bid farewell to the town. By the way, as they left the town, the sort of pleasant scenes that are described with Sergeant Joseph White presenting gifts to this unidentified young lady, Sally, trying to make a deal to get his cakes. He never did get his cakes baked because they had to leave too quickly. The British came in and sacked the town, attacked some of the women. Cornwallis and his men, so angry at having missed Washington. Washington had left just a half hour ahead of Cornwallis. And they're marching along the road again. What's the intention? The intention was to strike at Brunswick, a very lightly guarded British garrison. The key thing there was not only taking over armaments, cannon, guns, but the 70,000 pounds of money that the Army absolutely, desperately, desperately needed. The problem is, they have fought all day at Princeton. It's getting dark. And just 3 miles northeast of Princeton, the Army crossed Millstone Creek and arrived at a tiny town, really just a couple of buildings. It's called Kingston. And there was a fork in the road right there. The main highway went straight on to Brunswick, just 18 miles away, a tantalizing 18 miles. If they marched all night again, they'd be there by dawn. They had marched all night the night before to get to Princeton. They had marched all night to attack Trenton 10 days before. Now, just 18 miles more to Brunswick. But Washington paused at the fork in the road, because there was a left-hand highway, a smaller road, that followed the winding course of a little river downstream toward a Somerset courthouse, which was basically just a courthouse and a few buildings near it. And here, at this intersection, Washington called a council of war. He called his staff up, his officers up, and Major Wilkinson remembered that the commander-in-chief sat on his horse with several other general officers. They halted for quite a while, perhaps an hour, looking wistfully in the direction of Brunswick, with everyone speculating on what they could do if they only had some fresh troops. The difficulty is that the men were absolutely exhausted. They had marched all night the night before. They had fought all day at Princeton. They simply could not be asked to do anything more after what they had been through. Henry Knox, bemoaning the fact that the troops had been without rest, rum, or provisions for two nights and days, Joseph White hadn't even gotten his cakes, thought that if they had 1,000 additional soldiers, they could have struck one of the most brilliant strokes in all history. The question here was, do you risk everything and go on to Brunswick for this money, for yet another triumph? The reason it's a risk? Well, you arrive in Brunswick, you're exhausted, and Cornwallis can fall down upon you and simply take the army prisoner. Here's what Washington wrote to Congress. My original plan when I set out from Trenton was to have pushed into Princeton and then on to Brunswick. But the harassed state of our own troops, many of them having had no rest for two nights and a day, and the danger of losing the advantage we had gained by aiming it too much, induced me, by the advice of my officers, to relinquish in the attempt. But in my judgment, 600 or 800 fresh troops upon a forced march would have destroyed all their stores and magazines, taken, as we have since learned, their military chest containing 70,000 pounds, and put an end to the war. If Washington had captured Brunswick, could it have put an end to the war as he believed? Possibly. But it could have gone the other way as well, because there really was no telling as to whether Washington himself would have been captured and his army captured by Cornwallis coming in.
Hi, I'm Nick Grovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, serving collectors since 1983. Our reputation is spotless, which is why well-respected radio talk show hosts Dennis Prager and Michael Medved have recommended me for years. Some dealers offer gimmicks like free silver. Really, free silver? They have to make that cost up somewhere. Others tell you to drop in and offer gold and silver bullion, but use bait and switch tactics to sell you expensive collectible coins instead. While they're fun and historical, they're usually marked up 10 times as much as bullion. Have questions? Give me a call and I'll share my 4 decades of experience with you. Whether you want to buy, sell, or trade, call me at 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694. Or visit AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694.
The country and the culture are in chaos. Our traditional foundations are under attack. And we're told that America didn't begin in 1776 with the stirring vision of the founders, but in 1619 with the first arrival of slaves. One organization that resists this sort of nonsense and that proudly holds true to the nation's first principles is the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College. Go to the website, faithandfreedom.com, and you'll see insightful, bold opinion pieces on subjects like religious freedom, socialism, free markets, and above all, a vigorous defense of Western civilization. See Dr. David Ayers on Why Did They Steal My Flag? See Dr. Gary Smith on I Still Like Ike. And see our friend Paul Kanger's latest on Karl Marx's nasty views on Christianity, Judaism, evolution, and race. You can find all of this and much more at the website for the Institute of Faith and Freedom. Go to michaelmedved.com and click on the banner, the Institute for Faith and Freedom.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines, and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women. Here's Dr. Sonia Baccia on The Doctors.
So this is a product we're going to see if it works. It's called Instantly Ageless. And the idea is that it works very quickly, as you just need a very small amount. And then you apply it to areas where you might be a little bit puffy. I have just looked at what's in this product, and one of them is something called argireline, which is sort of a darling in dermatology right now. It's a peptide or a protein that actually relaxes the muscle. It's also called Botox in a bottle. The other active ingredient in this is silicates, which are almost act like a clay. They're minerals, and they're making the skin sort of tighter. It's actually increasing the surface tension on the skin to push that herniated fat pad back.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton.
Washington pushed his exhausted men onward past the little crossroads where he paused for this very fateful council of war, and pushed them on and on to the tiny village of Somerset Courthouse. When they came up to Somerset Courthouse, they were absolutely exhausted. Having been through a battle, some of these boys had been on their feet for 48 hours. They had fought two battles in the dead of winter, made a forced night march across 16 rugged miles, had been almost without food or drink. They were, as Washington knew, approaching the outer limits of human endurance. It was a real question how far they could travel. What happened is when they reached the courthouse, they simply collapsed. Some of them came inside the building. Some of them simply fell asleep in the cold, in the freezing cold outside. And then the next day, still trying to dodge Cornwallis, Washington moved on. He selected in advance as a place to move on the town of Morristown. Morristown was perfect for his purposes. It was in the mountains, the Watchung Mountains of New Jersey. And it was one of those places where there was a swamp that was impassable on one side of the town. On the other side of the town, you had to enter through a mountain pass, which was very easily defensible. You simply had to station guards there. It was a protected town. There were a number of farmhouses that were available, structures available as shelter for people. When they arrived in Morristown, the army was relieved. And here, at last, Washington was planning to make his winter quarters. You may remember that a while ago, General Howe, the British general back in New York City, had said that he had called off the campaign of 1776. The campaign was over. Washington didn't pay attention to that. The big problem here, the men had reenlisted for a month more, and many of them were indeed determined to go home. They just weren't about to stay. They had won the Battle of Trenton. They had now won the Battle of Princeton. Many of the people were determined to go home. But Washington knew that at his quarters at Morristown, with these two victories, the victory at Trenton and the victory at Princeton, everything had changed, and people would begin rallying to the American cause, and he could reassemble an army and begin to replace the people that he had lost. This was one of the key differences in the Revolution, is the British had a tremendously difficult time replacing any men that they lost, because you had to basically bring those men across an ocean. And that was expensive and it was difficult. There were 3 million Americans living in the various colonies, not including the slave population. And by the way, one of the things that everyone talks about is how many free Negroes and how many Negroes who left slavery, getting their freedom in return for fighting in the Continental Army, fought in this Continental Army. It was absolutely an integrated force that included a fairly large number. Some people even estimated as many as 20% of its number being people of color. Meanwhile, Sergeant Joseph White, our old friend, well, he's about to disappear to history. Because he writes in his diary, the term of my enlistment being out, this is in March, just 2 months after his experience at Princeton, his experience at Trenton, his heroic service, he had been in the Army since Bunker Hill. The term of my enlistment being out, General Knox addressed the artillery in a pathetic manner, begging us to stay 2 months longer. Most of our regiment did. The captain said to me, do persuade the men to stay 2 months until the new recruits learn how to handle the cannon. Have you put down your name, said he? I said I had not made up my mind. However, I put my name down to stay until the 1st of March, 1777. If I had left it when my time was out, I should have escaped many dangers and sufferings I experienced that winter. When we were at Chatham, that's up in Morristown, was put into a small school for barracks, as many as 40 men, not room enough for us all to lay down. I told the captain that place would not do for us. He got a better place to sleep. Finally, the end of March came along, and he says, my time I had engaged for had expired. I told the captain the last day of February that I should set out for home the next morning. I wanted him to give me a discharge and a month's pay. Step here, said he, and take your pay. You are crazy to leave us now. Colonel Knox is made Brigadier General, and 2 regiments more are to be raised, and every sergeant will have a commission. Your name is the 3rd in the list for one. You will be at least a captain. A lieutenant, perhaps, I think. Or a full captain, said he. I told him I should go home. I did not care about a commission. All our officers met that evening and gave me very flattering discharge. I left the army, and in about 2 weeks, marched home, safe and sound. We know nothing else about Sergeant Joseph White, by the way, who did leave the army, went home to his mother. He was 20 years old. And he had enlisted when he was 18. He's 20 now. He disappeared from history from that day in 1777 for another 41 years. And not until 1818 does he turn up in the pages of history again. Then, only 2 weeks after President Monroe signed a pension act for Revolutionary veterans, White materialized in the pension records. On March 31st, 1818, James Monroe, who had been wounded, remember, James Monroe was now president, he had been wounded at the Battle of Trenton, who was the same age as Sergeant White. Monroe promised a pension for any Revolutionary War veteran who had suffered hardship, who was poor. And on March 31st, 1818, Sergeant White appeared before a Massachusetts judge to file a declaration of eligibility. By May of the following year, then as now apparently, government didn't exactly move along at a breakneck speed. Sergeant White had been able to certify that he was a legitimate veteran, and he had established, as the act required, that he was in sufficiently, quote, reduced circumstances to deserve the $8 per month enlisted man pension. Officers got $20 a month. Here's the schedule he submitted of his personal property at the time. He owned, total, an old printing press worth $20, type worth another $10, and a cutting press valued at $1. The tools of his trade as a printer, apparently, at which he was a failure. His books and ballads came to $5, toys and etc. to $3, 4 spoons, $2. The whole pathetic total of what he owned in the world, $61.55. He was owed $18, but his debts were $11.50. The judge who forwarded this document to the War Department added his comment that a decrepit soldier, 63 years old, cannot do much at any labor. White got his pension, his $8 a week. He deserved it. Meanwhile, those who remained with George Washington at Morristown found a reasonably pleasant winter. And yet they did not entirely give up the battle against the British. They continued a guerrilla-style campaign which had devastating impact, particularly considering the British psychology at the time. We will get to that and get to General Howe in New York and what he is up to, and the new British plan for yet another massive new offensive, three-pronged offensive, to end this brutal war once and for all.
Thanks for listening to this special presentation of the Michael Medved Show, The Battle of Princeton. For the rest of this program, go to medvedhistorystore.com and you can download it there. It's on offer on MP3 download or audio CD. We also hope you enjoyed the Battle of Trenton program that we kicked off today with. There's so many programs available at Medved History Store on the American Revolution, on the Vietnam War, World War II, also profiles of great Americans, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, Martin Luther King Jr., and a whole holiday section of the Medved History Store about Christmas. We're going to be playing that show tomorrow, the Thanksgiving holiday, Veterans Day, and so much more. Thank you for your continued support of this program in so many ways, by listening, by downloading the podcast, by being Medheads. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for the secret history of the Christmas holiday in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com. Only rarely does a new film come along to remind movie lovers of Hollywood's golden age some 80 years ago. Greyhound, starring Tom Hanks, is that sort of old-fashioned thriller, notably enriched by state-of-the-art special effects and riveting action sequences showing World War II's Battle of the Atlantic. Hanks, who also wrote the screenplay, portrays a destroyer captain given his first command, leading a crucial Anglo-American convoy across the ocean, but facing destruction by wolf packs of German submarines. Based on a 1955 novel by C.S. Forrester, who also wrote the beloved Horatio Hornblower series, this film gives loving attention to the hero's profound Christian faith. Hanks shows the overburdened commander at prayer on multiple occasions while portraying the emotional bonds between men of every background facing danger together. As with Saving Private Ryan, where Hanks also starred, or the great John Adams miniseries, which he produced, Greyhound enriches our culture with an inspiring story of American heroism. I'm Michael Medved.
Hi, my name is Lily. My mom and dad used to fight about money all the time. Then one day, I heard them talking about this guy, some uncle I never knew, called Uncle Sam. Well, they say this Uncle Sam guy wanted them to pay him like a gazillion dollars, and they didn't have a gazillion dollars. So they called this company they heard on the radio called the Tax Doctor. And the Tax Doctor worked with Uncle Sam's people. I think they're called the IRS. And they are able to work it out so my mom and dad didn't have to pay Uncle Sam very much money at all. So now mom and dad are happy, and I'm happy too. Thanks, Tax Doctor.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state, call now and pay less. 800-391-8713. 800-391-8713. That's 800-391-8713.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach, at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.